everybody. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly Chicago, our Pro Football Weekly NFL podcast. All things Chicago Bears, all things pro football in Chicago, everything you want to know out there in Bears Nation. I am Hub Arkish. I have a little bit of history with the Bears over the years, and I am joined by our senior editor at Pro Football Weekly, Arthur Arkish, who also covers the NFC North for USA Today Sports Weekly. So we've got a lot of Bears and NFC North time invested between us. And Arthur, everybody wanted to make it the big story this week. Mitchell Trubisky, now the number two quarterback of the Chicago Bears. I like the kid. I'm impressed by him. He's a better athlete than I thought he was. He's got a better arm than I thought he did. And I'm a little tired of Mitchell Trubisky at this point. The fact is he's now the number two quarterback. And the reality is that for the Bears and their fans, the next couple weeks are about Mike Glennon and the number one offense.
Yeah, Hub, there's no doubt about it. In the short term, the performance, the success or lack thereof of Mike Glennon is going to be more important to the Bears in the short term. But obviously the long-term view here centers on Mitch Trubisky, and Bears fans have been starved for any Bears decision maker to take a shot at the quarterback position like Ryan Pace did with Trubisky. So the hype isn't going away. The talk isn't going away. But I agree. I think there are more important things to discuss if the Bears are going to try and pull off a huge upset Sunday versus Atlanta and the defending conference champs.
Well, and here's what's a little frustrating to me about it, and mainly because I think it's so unfair to the young man. I'm very impressed by Mitch Trubisky. They got more than I thought they did when they took him with the second overall pick in the NFL draft. But he has not been as good as everybody is making him out to be. People saw four preseason games. People saw what he did late against second and third and fourth stringers against Denver week one. He was not as good starting out week two, week three. I saw all but two of their Bourbonnais practices this year, saw all their OTAs, all their mini camps. Again, I'm a Trubisky fan. I think they made a good pick there. But he did not have nearly the great preseason that everybody's laying it out to be. He made some very nice throws. He did appear to be ahead of schedule in terms of how he's learning and picking up the offense.
Yeah, I mean, ahead of schedule is the key words there. The Bears have decided that he is ready. They said repeatedly this week that he earned the opportunity to be in front of Mark Sanchez. Now, we can debate if there's a reason that Mark Sanchez is still on this roster or not. Maybe that's for a different discussion. But I've went back and forth on this, and I think what I've come to is that Mitch Trubisky isn't Christian Hackenberg, obviously, and the Jets mothballed Christian Hackenberg last year. Their number three quarterback made sure he wasn't going to see the field. But a lot of high picks at the position. Look at the Chiefs. They may contend this season, and they've already elevated Patrick Mahomes to number two. So they're rewarding Trubisky for playing well. No, he's not a finished product, but that athleticism you talk about, too. If you are going to have things thrown into disarray in the middle of a game, maybe you'd rather have Trubisky, who can be a bit of an improviser and can avoid rush that way and make plays off schedule, something Mark Sanchez isn't going to do. Maybe that went into this thinking a little bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, I have no issues with him being number two ahead of Sanchez, and I think the answer to your question as to why he's still on the roster, I wrote this in a column a couple weeks ago. I think he was brought in to be a life coach for Mike Glennon and Mitch Trubisky. I think the Bears have all but said that, because the reality is when you look at Mark Sanchez's career on NFL fields, it's not that impressive. It's not like it's right. A guy you can't afford not to have as your number two quarterback. So I get his place in the whole thing. I have no issues with Trubisky being number two. I'm just trying to slow the roll here. Get Bears fans to understand what you're really dealing with. This is still a quarterback with 13 games of major college experience, a guy who couldn't get off the bench at North Carolina for a couple years. He is a very good athlete. He appears to have excellent arm talent. I think he's got a chance to be a really good quarterback in the NFL. But this idea that he tore up the league during the preseason is just not a real accurate telling if you were out there watching him practice every day. And as a matter of fact, there were many practices where he was struggling in the same way that Mike Glennon has struggled. And I'm anxious to see what Mike Glennon can do. He had that horrible decision on the second pass of his Bears career in the opener against Denver. And ever since, people have acted like the guy's incompetent. No, he's not. He's got some skills. He's interesting in the pocket. I don't know that he's ever going to be a franchise quarterback, but I do want to see him start four, five, six games before I'm ready to write him off.
Well, look, if the Bears were to go immediately to Trubisky, one thing they're going to do is just destroy any trade value that they may have with Mike Glennon eventually. The best case scenario for the Bears is that Glennon plays really well. They don't need Trubisky this year, and then they have an asset come next offseason in a quarterback league with the shortage at the position. So we'll see. It's going to be fascinating, but you're talking about slowing the roll with Trubisky. I know we want to move on to other topics. I think the reason that this is important to discuss now is just a look at the Bears' first month. Their schedule is brutal, and if they get off to a miserable start, I'm not predicting it, but certainly it's possible with not one opponent with a losing record in 2016 until like week seven, I believe. If the Bears start really slow and they're out of this thing soon, it's going to be very tough not to turn to the kid and see what you have. I know the fans will be calling for it, but we got to get these games played first and see if the Bears maybe can exceed expectations like Trubisky did this preseason.
You know, I think sometimes people get confused about what the fans want and what's good for the football team and good for these players. And I don't disagree with what you just said, but again, I think it needs a caveat. If they get off to a slow start, but it's not because of Mike Glennon. In fact, Glennon is playing fairly well. When you realize he has basically no NFL wide receivers right now, he's got Kendall Wright, who should be a three or a four on most teams. We don't know when Marcus Wheaton's going to go. I think any hope of him playing against the Falcons is silly. All he's doing is catching Nerf balls right now. We don't know what Kevin White can do, and we do know what Josh Bellamy and Deontay Thompson can do, and it's not enough, you know. So it's going to be very interesting. I think the bottom line is that people keep talking about 1 year with Mike Glennon. It's a three-year deal. Yeah, the guaranteed money is there. That all goes away in the first year regardless. But actually, the best thing that could happen to the Chicago Bears is Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench for 3 years in Green Bay because Brett Favre was busy leading them to the playoffs and to contention. And the reality is that Rodgers never got a start and threw a total of 35 passes his first 3 years in the NFL. He is now, along with Tom Brady, one of the two best quarterbacks in the league. There is no magic bullet here. There is no proof whatsoever that getting Trubisky on the field sooner rather than later is a good thing. So I just think that, Bears Nation needs to let it run its course, and let's see what Glennon can do. Let's see what Dowell Loggins can do with Mike Glennon, because Dowell Loggins, the guy who's Mitch Trubisky is going to be entrusted to, and I'm fascinated to see what the game plan looks like as far as how they use these receivers or lack thereof, how they use two, three tight ends. I think they're going to do a lot with their running backs in the slot as really primary receivers, not just Tariq Cohen, but maybe even this new kid, Mizell. So there's a lot to see, and for the next few weeks at least, it's not going to spin around Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, a really good segue there. Did you guys see it's a pros pro hub right there, and I think we can talk about the receivers now. We were going to talk about injuries, and you started to get into it. That group is a major issue, probably the biggest issue on the Bears heading into the season. And you're right. I mean, we talk about Trubisky's inexperience, but Mike Glennon hasn't made a start since 2014. He's going to have to knock off rust as well. And I'm a little worried that these receivers, if Dowell Loggins can't be super creative with his tight ends and running backs, that this receiver shortage is potentially going to harm the development of either of these young quarterbacks.
Well, and this is why there's so much pressure on Kevin White. And fair or not, it is what it is. He was the seventh overall pick in the draft. He deserves no blame whatsoever, no criticism whatsoever for suffering basically two broken legs, or a broken leg and a broken ankle, stress fracture, you know, whatever you want to call them. That happens. That's not his fault. He did have a clean medical coming out of West Virginia. Now, there were other questions that people have chosen to forget, like he wasn't a complete receiver. He was definitely a developmental prospect. He didn't run a full route tree at West Virginia. He was not dominant in 2 years of junior college football. He only had the one big year at West Virginia. You got all that that you got to deal with. But at the end of the day, year three, no matter what happened the first 2 years with those injuries, if he's going to be a number one or a number two or a number three receiver, whatever he's going to be, he's got to be that from day one against Atlanta. Because, I like Marcus Wheaton. I thought that was a good signing. One of the reasons the Steelers let him get away is they never knew when he was going to be available. He's injury prone. Hopefully that's not going to be a continuing trend here in Chicago. As we said, Kendall Wright, nothing more than a number three. I think that for all the credit, and I think it's a ton of credit that Ryan Pace deserves for identifying Trubisky and making that pick and making that move, they went to camp short at the wide receiver position. Yes, the injury to Cam Meredith is tough, but, you know, Victor Cruz turned out not to have anything left. You've got Reuben Randall was IR'd early because they weren't counting on him all that much. So they are light in the receiver group, and that's going to make it difficult to develop any quarterback, whether it's Glennon or Trubisky.
Yeah, and I don't want to hang Ryan Pace for the Alshon Jeffrey decision. I've been asked on some radio shows, and I think it's only natural to go to Alshon and his obvious absence from this roster after you see some of the receiver issues that are going to occur. So I don't think that's part of it, but you're right. Kevin White, He hasn't looked like the explosive player that was the seventh overall pick coming out of West Virginia. Like you said, the injuries certainly will play a big part in that, but it also could be that he had such a big learning curve and he's so worried about picking up a route tree. And again, he's had such a limited time to do it. So I think it's going to be gradual with Kevin White. That's how it was last year. Maybe by week three, week four, he's starting to come into his own. Unfortunately, that's when he went down last year against the Cowboys. So other big injuries, Hub, for week one anyway. What about Prince Amukamara? I don't really like the term injury prone, but yes, Marcus Wheaton had unfortunate durability concerns with Pittsburgh. Prince Amukamara, former first rounder with the Giants, has had the same one. I believe he's only had one 16 game season, and he's really in jeopardy to make his Bears debut Sunday against, oh yeah, Julio Jones.
Well, he's been brittle. There's no question about that. He has struggled. Let me just go back real quickly to put a wrap on Alshon Jeffrey. Bears Nation, get used to the idea that regardless of what Jeffrey said or refused to say, he didn't want to be in Chicago. This has nothing to do with...
He took less money not to be. So.
This has nothing to do with Ryan Pace. I mean, yep. I think they did absolutely the right thing letting him get away. That's not the loss. The loss is what have they done, or not the loss, but the... And I don't want to call it a failure yet because we don't know. The troubling aspect right now is what they've done or how little they've done to try and replace him.
Right.
You know, you look at this whole deal with Amukamara and let's just get to it. Wednesday practice, no participation was Marcus Wheaton, Prince Amukamara, and Kyle Long. I think all three are out Sunday. Now, yep. You know, that's not a given, but that's usually the way it works in the NFL, particularly coming out of training camp. When you're coming out of training camp and you cannot practice on Wednesday, pretty good bet you're not going to play on Sunday. And so I will say this about Amukamara, though, who I kind of like. Kyle Fuller was the Bears' best defensive back in the preseason. And we've always known the kid has some ability. I'm not on the bandwagon yet. There's a lot to overcome here. But I think that as long as Marcus Cooper, who also has a history of getting nicked up, if he's 100% ready to go on the other side, you start Kyle Fuller. Both kids, Bryce Callahan and Craven LeBlanc, have shown some ability. When they can stay healthy, Callahan's the one in particular. He gets nicked up more than anybody. Right. So I think Amukamara is a big deal, and you want him to be healthy. You want him to be there. But for a week or two, I'm anxious to see what Kyle Fuller can do out there. I'm not as concerned about that. The big one to me is Kyle Long.
Yep.
Because we just don't know what's going on there. And the reality is that I thought, you know, coming out of basically mini camps and OTAs in June, offensive line was going to be a strength of this football team.
Yeah.
Well, A, Kyle Long's a really good football player. But the bigger issue I have, which is B, the plan is obviously to move Cody Whitehair out to left guard and play Hronus Grisu at center. Cody Whitehair has not looked nearly as good at guard this preseason as he does at center, and Hronus Grisu, I'm not convinced, can play in the league. So now a strength could become a weakness and a dangerous one with these young quarterbacks if Kyle Long can't go soon.
Yeah, you could see the same domino effect that we had a few years ago when Kyle Long was kicked out to right tackle a few days before the season. You kind of got worse at two spots that way. In losing Eric Kush, people didn't want to talk about it at the time, but it was an underrated injury, one of what nine guys already on injured reserve for the Bears. It's amazing. The Rams released their week one injury report for Wednesday. It said no injuries, none, not one name. I can't really remember that even heading into a season. So it does show you that the Bears are struggling a little bit in that regard already. And just to quickly mention on Kyle Long and all these guys' absences, well, if Julio Jones wasn't the best player in the Super Bowl for the Falcons, it was Grady Jarrett. So the Bears have questions along the interior of their offensive line, and it's not a good time for that.
Grady Jarrett, now they put Dontari Poe next to him. And Dontari Poe, that's a manimal. I mean, this is a guy you really do not want to mess with. So they're going to be challenged and challenged early. And then the other one, Arthur, is that I don't get the Charles Leno contract. I've heard the explanation, talked to Ryan Pace on Wednesday. I'm not disputing it. I'm not disagreeing. I'm not saying that he's bad or can't play. I just don't see what he has shown you that suddenly you've committed to him being the anchor of your offensive line for the next 4 years. Bears fans should understand the money he got, while any one of us would kill to have it, is not obscene as NFL standards go. Right. It made him the 18th highest paid tackle in the NFL. There are a handful of right tackles that are making more money than him. So they didn't overpay, which is probably one of the reasons they did it. But I don't know that they can trust him with these young quarterbacks blindside.
Yeah, you know, I think Leno's okay. I think, you know, clearly he has exceeded expectations as a former seventh rounder coming out of Boise State. He has been durable, and I'm always an advocate for getting to these guys early because you can find some potential savings, as you just alluded to, although it's still a nice deal. He got more guaranteed, I believe, than David Bakhtiari for one name, maybe, you know, a top three left tackle in the league. There's a few other recent extensions that he did get passed with his guaranteed amount. But I think the other thing is the Bears want to anchor their offensive line from the middle. We're seeing the strength is along the interior, and they've got these tight ends. They gave Deion Sims $10 million, the biggest contract after Mike Glennon in free agency, because they want him to help out on the edges. There's no question that he's going to have to, but I think the Bears have bigger concerns than Charles Leno. And it is interesting, you mentioned Kyle Fuller. All right, so you got the first round pick in 2014, who we thought maybe wouldn't even be on the roster, and he's had himself a nice preseason, and the seventh round pick, who was an afterthought for everyone at the time, and he's the left tackle of the future. So not saying Phil Emery did, you know, Phil Emery certainly didn't leave a good situation here for Ryan Pace, but kind of fascinating that these two guys are looming large entering week one here.
It's a nice bonus. It reminds me of the Cubs, you know, and people want to talk about Theo Epstein. Everybody forgets that Javi Baez and Wilson Contreras were left for him by Jim Hendry.
Yeah.
So it happens with every team and every sport. In this case, I like Phil. I always enjoyed Phil. Unfortunately, he still gets an F for general manager of the Chicago Bears, because while they're leaving this week, Lamar Houston, that's very disappointing to me. I thought Houston was coming on strong late in camp. I thought he was playing really well, granted, in the fourth preseason against Cleveland. I don't know if they made up their minds that he couldn't make a difference for them, or they just were afraid he was going to get banged up again. But that was arguably one of Phil Emery's biggest free agency signings that also has now proven to have not been such a good idea.
Yeah, and we should mention, I don't think that this was an injury-based decision. There was a national report on Wednesday that Lamar Houston's going to be ready to work out for another team soon, and he probably will catch on somewhere. I think he's 31. He's coming off two serious injuries. But is there a connection hub between the Bears maybe being optimistic? I don't know if it's blind faith, but what about Pernell McPhee? Because it's not like there's great depth on the edges, and to let go of one of your most proven pass rushers at this time is interesting.
I'm going to give you a prediction on Lamar Houston. I don't know if you noticed, Shea McClellan went to the IR for the Patriots.
Yeah.
Houston will surface in New England and probably have 10 sacks this year.
They've got pass rush concerns. That's an interesting prediction.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, do the Bears have an injury problem? I don't mean to digress here, but I think it's luck. I really don't. I think they're in a run of bad luck. But we alluded to it a few minutes ago. Now we're talking about it again. You don't come out of training camp as banged up as this football team is. So I'm not blaming the Bears people, but they're in a run of real tough luck, and it does make it difficult to develop all these guys, you know. So we'll keep an eye on it.
Hub, I think it's luck too, but we should just add, and not to pat ourselves on the back, but you were out in front of the Pernell McPhee story shortly after it happened. That is not luck. Baltimore deemed him as damaged goods, and Ryan Pace took the bait.
Yeah, well, we knew that, and you know, again, different doctors have different medicals.
Right.
I've known the Bears doctors for a long time. I think they're great. I don't know that they miss so much as these knees degenerate. Anyway, getting back to your Pernell McPhee question, talk to him on Wednesday in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds good. He sounds like he's convinced himself that he's 100%.
Right.
John Fox keeps selling that he's in the best shape of his career.
He looks good.
He's the lightest that
yeah.
he's been. He says it makes him faster and quicker. At best, if you want to have him at all, you need to make him a situational pass rusher. Pernell McPhee shouldn't take more than 20 to 25, maybe 30 snaps a game, and he should be in there specifically to rush the passer. If they do that, and if they keep him from getting tied up in traffic a lot, the other thing they like to do with McPhee, because he's big enough and good enough, is they slide him inside and let him line up at a three technique and a 40 front in those sub packages. Don't do that anymore. Keep him away from the line.
Right.
Don't let him get in all that traffic where people are taking shots at his legs. Keep him on the outside. Let him be a situational pass rusher. You might get 8 to 10 sacks from him. He can make a difference. That's enough to help Leonard Floyd become a 15, 16 sack guy, because that's the guy I'm excited about.
Yep.
I wasn't thrilled when they took him at number 9, not because I didn't like him, because he wasn't proven, kind of the Trubisky story all over again. But, watching him last year, he had a much better rookie year than Vic Beasley did for Atlanta. We saw what Beasley did in his sophomore year last year. Watching Floyd in training camp, to me, he's the guy who is ready to explode, and I think can make a big difference in this defense and can be a feared pass rusher that other teams have to scheme for.
just to get an idea of how much that Hub thinks Leonard Floyd may be ready to exploit, head to ProFootballWeekly.com and check out his 2017 season predictions. Floyd predicted to take home some end-of-the-year hardware. So an interesting point. I know we're wrapping up here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, and we didn't make it a point to tell everyone to head to iTunes because we are back and we are with you weekly. So go to iTunes if you haven't subscribed already, and make sure you leave us a rating and review after you've done so. Just one more point on McPhee. Very interesting. You said everyone loves the versatility, but if he can't kick inside and put a hand in the dirt anymore, well, the Bears don't think it's going to be a problem because they think, in addition to Floyd, Jonathan Bullard is ready to come on strong. Akeem Hicks has already proven that he is a terror in the sub package at a three technique.
Yeah, I want to talk about a couple of those kids, but I just need 20 seconds because the irony of me doing a podcast is I've never known how to actually get one and download it and listen to it. So once again, just for our listeners, how does everybody get their Pro Football Week? Well, obviously they're listening now,
yep.
But tell your friends.
The best way to never miss an episode is to go to iTunes and subscribe both to the Pro Football Weekly podcast, the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We have fantasy podcasts. You're going to want to listen to all of them. So go and do that. And if you leave us a rating and review, that's the best way to help us continue to gain traction.
All right. So I'm already on record as predicting the Bears will be more than twice as good as last year. I think that they're possibly a 7-win team, maybe even 8-8. 6-10 to 8-8, 7-9 makes sense. The two reasons for it, the two things I'm the most excited about: the ground game, assuming that Kyle Long gets healthy and that offensive line gets to where it needs to be,
yep.
And the front seven. And we talked about Leonard Floyd and Pernell McPhee. I'm disappointed because I thought Jay Howard was going to make a big difference, and now he's not on the football team. I'm not disappointed because he got beat out by Jonathan Bullard and apparently Roy Robertson-Harris. Now, mm-hmm. I worry about Robertson-Harris because everything he did, other than the blocked punt, was against, you know, third and fourth stringers. But Bullard, you could just see. I loved this kid coming out of Florida. Was surprised he wasn't more of a factor last year. If Bullard is that much improved, if Floyd is that much improved, if McPhee is healthy, if Robertson-Harris can be a situational pass rusher from that five technique, I think the front seven can be very good, create a ton of pressure. That makes the secondary better. I think the Bears may have a top 10 defense this year.
It doesn't sound crazy. They got a lot of moving parts in the secondary. They got to learn to take the football away as well. But and of course, the guy we didn't mention is Eddie Goldman, and the sky's the limit for him if he can just stay healthy. And he did have himself a nice preseason too. Prior to, I believe he was in concussion protocol last week. We'll have to check on that. But yeah, there's a lot of optimism with this Bears defense, and this is the formula that John Fox has wanted to use his whole career: a nasty defense and a run game to kind of insulate the quarterback a little bit.
Yeah, a little concern that Goldman has been on the injury list again, right. This preseason. He spent a lot of time there his first couple years, but he's shown enough to show he can be really exciting. And Mitch Unrein hasn't really practiced much. He finally got back to practice this week, but he was hurt late in training camp. So, Arthur, we are normally going to be a half hour for all of our listeners. We've got to wrap up a couple minutes early today because we are coming to you from the studios of WCIU-TV on the U over at Weigel Broadcasting, where we do the Chicago Football Now show. We're going to be recording from here once a week and getting ready to go in and do this week's TV
show. It airs
show.
Saturday mornings at 10:30 on WCIU, and again, I believe at 2 o'clock on U2 if you're here in Chicago.
The U2, I think the second one might be 2:30, but
okay.
Check your guide for 2 or 2:30. In the meantime, Arthur, before we run, we can't leave without, you know, at least giving people a chance to laugh at us. It's prediction time. It's the Bears and the Falcons on Sunday at noon at Soldier Field, and I will let you go first.
You know, just four new starters in the secondary against the reigning MVP and the most dominant wide receiver on the planet. I don't think I have to say anything more. I think the Bears start off 0-1. I think they'll be competitive, though, because the Falcons still have some work to do on defense, a lot of players that have to come together and gel. And I think Jordan Howard gets off to a fast start, but it won't be enough. I've got the Falcons. I think I had it at 28-20 or something along those lines.
Well, and for our listeners who follow us religiously at ProFootballWeekly.com and also at our app, if you don't have our app, get our app. Get in your Apple App Store mm-hmm. or your Droid App Store because we've redone it. It really looks great. You may have noticed that inside of 2 hours, I picked both the Falcons and the Packers to go to the Super Bowl. That was a typo, okay? But I do have them playing in the NFC title game. The Falcons are really good, folks. This is more than a test. This is a mission for the Bears on Sunday. I think they're going to play them competitively. I think the defense will impress in the first half. I think they'll have some luck running the football. They're not ready to hang with the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons are going to put points up late. I think it's probably something like 31-20 Falcons over the Bears. That's going to do it for this week's Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. But stick with us every week, guys. We'll be back with you next week, same time, same station, which is whenever you want to download it and listen to it. Enjoy the podcast.